Hi, I'm Bill Arnold. Thanks for listening to the podcast from the Early Morning Late Show. It's 4 minutes after the hour. It is May 31. Can you believe it? We're so glad you're with me this morning. We've got a great second hour ahead on the Early Morning Late Show. Dr. Peter Kapsner is already in studio. I don't know why he's here so early, but he's here early enough. And then John Bloom's going to be joining us. And in starting at about 15 minutes after the hour, I think we're going to start the McArnold Group. So it's going to be fun. We're going to have a lively debate, unscripted, unrehearsed. We will not be yelling at each other unless that would help the ratings. So that's what we got planned in hour two. I was talking about Psalm 18, and I love this. I want to read a little bit more of it. Starting in verse 16, it said, "He reached down from on high and took hold of me. He drew me out of deep waters." There might be someone today who feels like they're in deep waters. Isn't it a great image to see God reaching down from on high and taking hold of you? Drawing you out of deep waters. Then in verse 17, it says, "He rescued me from my powerful enemy, from my foes who were too strong for me. They confronted me in the day of my disaster, but the Lord was my support. He brought me out into a spacious place. He rescued me because he delighted in me." What a great word. I'm going to chew on that one all day, maybe all week, maybe all month, maybe all year. It's 6 minutes after the hour. We'll take a little break, a mini break, I say. And then when we return, Dr. Peter Kapsner is with me in studio. And not the helpful kind of doctor where you're in the restaurant choking on a piece of cheese and the doctor comes over and helps you. That's not the kind of doctor he is. We'll be right back. Song belongs to Dr. Peter Kapsner, who has joined me in studio. Peter, good morning.
Good morning, Bill.
You know, you're just like me, only smarter and better looking.
You know, I've thought that for a while, but I'm glad you said it out loud finally, Bill. That's really helpful.
Finally, yeah.
Yes, yes.
So, summer vacation. What are what's the fam going to do this summer? All you and your five kids?
Yeah, it just started for me yesterday too. I hit submit. For the last time on the final grades of one of the classes. And there just is this really freeing moment. And so Little League started up in earnest as coaching my 8-year-old last night, you know, just trying to sort out how to hit that ball when it's coming out of the pitching machine at all different angles. And I think we're going to have a lot of baseball and just kind of a lot of fun this summer.
Yeah. Now, I had a listener write in and actually got a little feedback from a conversation you and I had.
Okay.
And maybe we go into it a little bit deeper just because this is one of those things where in my opinion, everything is spiritual, right?
Absolutely.
Isn't everything spiritual?
Yeah, to somehow disconnect our regular life somehow from the spiritual realm, and we just deal with the spiritual realm sometimes. Yeah. It doesn't make sense.
Our battles are not against flesh and blood, right?
Absolutely.
But against the spiritual forces in the world, right?
Absolutely.
Okay. So there was a comment that was made, and it was troubling on a couple levels, because Nancy Pelosi was talking about what President Trump said about gangs.
Right.
Now, I think she, unfortunately, wanted to take some of it back, but she can't because you can never backtrack. Because President Trump was talking about the MS-13 gangs, and if you look at their behavior, it's so off the charts.
It is.
It's almost an insult to humans to when you hear what they do.
Right.
Okay, I'm already stumbling over my words, help me here.
Yeah, no, and I think the reference was when he called MS-13 a group of animals, a bunch of animals. And we can take issue with maybe the framing of how the president talked about this issue and whether animals is the right term. But I think what we can say relative to this is that all day long, we are engaged in one way or the other in the kingdom of God and the beauty and the wonder that forms us and transforms us. Or there is the kingdom of darkness in this world that we can say yes to and begin to engage with. And there gets to be either a beauty that begins to explode in our life, or there is a disfiguring that happens. Sin really does distort and disfigure and really compromise the image of God that we have, all of us, internally, to the point that you don't recognize the human being after a period of time in this ongoing engagement with sin. So whether animal is the right term, I don't know about that, but the biblical text very much describes a hard-heartedness that comes that you really don't represent anymore what it was that you were designed for. Yeah. There's a serious thing going on
here. Okay, my wise listener named Jim said, what about John 8? In 44 to 45, it says, you belong to your father, the devil.
Yes, scary.
You want to carry out your father's desires. He was a murderer from the beginning, not holding to the truth, for there is no truth in him.
It's a frightening passage, and
I think so.
And I think it's an important one to pay attention to, that even very idea, because I know sometimes in our culture we tend to believe that we have these independent lives that we're living, that we're not really subject to or beholden to anyone. We're sort of free to live out our lives as they were. But the biblical witness would suggest you really have one of two options. You're either serving the master of the kingdom, that being Jesus of God, and living out your life that way, or you're increasingly being possessed and pervaded by the kingdom of darkness. There really isn't another. There's not a neutral option where I don't have to have anything to do with Jesus's kingdom or the realities of Satan. It's one or the other, and I think it's a great lie to believe that we can just live out neutrally. And if that's the case, and you become part of this kingdom of darkness in a way, in an ongoing fashion, it is going to disfigure us.
Yeah. And then didn't you have something interesting point C.S. Lewis made?
Well, it's one of my favorite quotes. I use it in class all day long. Yeah, it comes from his wonderful text, The Weight of Glory. And he writes that it's a serious thing to remember that the dullest and most uninteresting person you may talk to could be a creature that if you saw it now, you'd be strongly tempted to worship on the other side in heaven, or else a creature of such a horror and corruption that you meet only in a nightmare, if at all. Mm-hmm. And he's talking about all day long, we're moving in one of those two directions towards this sort of nightmarish reality or this creature of such beauty. And, you know, Bill, I think of a woman in my life, in Hallie's life, my wife too, who is one of our mentors. And when she got to be in her late 80s and was in her last couple weeks of life, she was in the hospital room, and her body obviously had been broken and bruised by life, osteoporosis and tubes and just all of what you would think would be ugly and you wouldn't want to see in life. And yet when we came into her room, because she had lived this life all day long of in the small ways in her life, yielding and sacrificing and loving when it mattered and forgiving, there was this tangible sense of beauty in that hospital room. It didn't make death easier, but you could sense that there was something waiting to escape that would be then redeemed in fullness on the other side. And so there is a sense of peace in that hospital room. And I'm sure some of our listeners can relate to that idea of sometimes peace or even sometimes troubling in these rooms, you know, as we get to the end of our life about what's there. There's a real deal going on
here. Yeah. My friend Bob was probably listening. He runs a 9-bed hospice.
Oh, he does.
Yeah, and he said, you know, you're around people perishing every day.
Yeah,
and he says it's an amazing difference when a person knows the Lord and has lived a life devoted to serving Him, the peace that comes. And then there are people who have been pushing aside talking to any kind of chaplain or anybody. And maybe has not lived a life for the Lord, that their end is a little different. So.
I've heard that over and over. And I teach a lot of nurses over in the program at Bethel, in which I teach, and they report time and again. And some of these nurses are believers, and some are not. But all of them will report that exact kind of experience over and over again. They deal with all day long in care that end of life really does reveal a lot about our lives.
It does.
As the veil gets torn away a bit.
Yeah. All right, let's talk a little bit about what. Nancy Pelosi said about, in response to President Trump's remark, that everyone has a divine spark. Now, I know that's kind of a common thing in Gnostic and mystical religions.
It is.
That every human being possesses kind of a part of God is in them. And I sometimes go, let's talk about that biblically.
Yeah.
That the divine spark, is there any biblical reference to that? Does Genesis 1:26 teach that every human being possesses the image of God? So is that Is it, would that qualify as the divine spark?
Yeah, there's a big and really important difference between kind of this Gnostic teaching of the divine spark that was deemed heresy in the early church versus being made in the image of God. And that difference is what the Gnostics would have believed was true, is that if we can just free ourselves in certain ways of earthly influence, that we will realize that we actually are God inside and our God likeness can be revealed. And so we're just one of the many gods of the universe that we become, as opposed to the idea that I'm made in the image of God, that the reality of my creator is within me in such a way that I can mirror his image on earth. And so one, you're seeking freedom towards your godlikeness, and the other is you're bending your knee to realize the image that's in you, but it comes from God. And so the difference is dependence versus independence. And of course, the Gnostics were seen as heretics because they took that idea of God, the image of God, and said, we don't need God. We can actually be God ourselves. But that was the first temptation of the serpent in the garden was, if you eat of this fruit, you can be like God. You can sort of cut God out of the equation. And I think that divine spark idea, though I think it's helpful in the sense that we are made in the image of God, it goes too far in saying that we can be God ourselves.
All right. And then in Ecclesiastes chapter 3, verse 11, it says that God has set eternity in the hearts of men. So we must have something in our hearts that say, yeah, there is something after. Even though many people still have refused God to the point where their heart may be so hard and they don't see it. And then Luke 17:21 says the kingdom of God is within you. So I don't know how we process those biblically.
Well, it's I think the great and unique invitation of the Christian faith versus all other religions in this world is the idea that there is a future that was represented then in that empty tomb, that we saw the tangible results of this all being broken open when Jesus died on the cross and then was raised. And Paul says things like, if that tomb was not empty, our faith would be in vain. And so this eternity that we have in our hearts, that we know there's something more beyond the suffering of this world, that we know that we're called to an eternal kind of kingdom, that's the beauty and wonder of the gospel, that Jesus shows us the way through death into life, so that this eternity that is in our hearts, we know we have a home ultimately in the future, however hard this life gets. And that really is the great invitation of the Christian faith versus all other worldviews.
And Peter, only a person who's been redeemed by Christ, they can truly connect with God.
Yeah, it's, I mean, I think anybody, right, being made in the image of God can move that direction, but you still have to say yes. We were talking with my son last night, who's 18, and we just have these wonderful faith conversations now in this ongoing way, and he was able to say along the lines of, you know, it requires humility, doesn't it? It really is this idea of you have to bend your knee in order to be able to walk in these ways of the kingdom. The starting point is always bending your knee in humility, and then you connect with God, and eternity begins to just sort of explode in your life.
Peter, let me take a break. When we come back, we'll get the McArnold Group going, because I see that John Bloom is already in the green room, and he's stuffing Faith Radio pens into his briefcase.
So yeah,
It's probably time to get him out of the green room and into the studio.
I agree. The budget's taking a hit this last month with him. So.
We'll take a break and be right back at 17 minutes after the hour.
It's the McArnold Group, an so unrehearsed program, providing inside opinions and musings on important issues. At least, that's what we tell them. And now, here's your moderator, Bill McArnold.
Welcome to the McArnold Group. It's the feistiest collection of misfits on morning radio. We promise no screaming or interrupting each other, unless it would help the ratings. My guests, of course, are Dr. Peter Kapsner and John Bloom. Before, gentlemen, we get into our first lively, unrehearsed, unscripted discussion, I think we could probably wrap up some of the conversation about the divine spark. Without the truth and life of Jesus Christ, according to John 14:6, there is no spark. I am the way, the truth, and the life. No one comes to the Father except through me. And unless we've been redeemed by Christ, we can't really have a connection with God. So without a relationship with the light of the world, there's no light.
It's what we talked about in the last segment. In order to be able to experience and realize the fullness of the light of God, there has to be an invitation to say yes to it. You can't drum it up yourself. There is this bent knee that says, I will embrace, I will yield. And that is the consistent call of the text in both the Old and the New Testament, is to bend your knee and to follow into the unknown. And from those places, then, the life of God begins to be manifest in your life.
And welcome to the program, John Bloom.
Thank you. Great to be here.
Yeah, as always. Say, I read your recent blog, and I had tears in my eyes at 20 minutes to 4 this morning. So, again, you write beautifully, and there is a great pathos in your article this morning. So thank you for sharing it with us.
Oh, you're welcome.
Yeah, and you can find that at desiringgod.org. But I would like for you to talk about it a little bit. You just celebrated 30 years with Pam, your wife.
Right.
Yeah.
So what we did something strange, and it was completely unplanned.
Kind of like this show.
Very much like this show. What wasn't strange was that we decided to spend the day together. And so we had a bunch of things we wanted to do, and we spent, took a long walk, spent a long time talking, ate some leisurely meals together. But something we did that was completely unplanned and ended up being the most memorable point of the day was we spent time in a graveyard. And if that sounds morbid, the reason we decided to do that was only because we were driving by Lakewood Cemetery, and Pam said, "Oh, can you pull in? I want to show you this beautiful chapel that's on the grounds." I had not been in the chapel. I don't know if you guys have seen
that
chapel.
Yeah, it's gorgeous.
It's an amazing
thing.
So we drove in. So it looked like the chapel was being used, and so what we did is we drove over to the grave of a friend, somebody who had been very dear to us. And he died 20 years ago. And that just was a remarkable moment just to take it in. It had been 20 years. And as we were contemplating his life, and as we were looking around this beautiful green field, we saw in thousands of stones all around us, inscribed with names and dates, and many of them had the names of husbands and wives. And so just the weight of our own mortality, especially at 30 years, just was settling on us. And we started feeling the weight of the verse from Ecclesiastes, where it says, "It is better to go into the house of mourning than the house of feasting, because this is the end of all mankind, and the living will lay it to heart." That's Ecclesiastes 7:2.
I do need you to continue, because there's more. There's more.
Yeah, so we were feeling the weight of our end. We walked back to the chapel, and the chapel was vacant. And so we walked in, and if you've been there, you'll know it's mosaic tile, beautiful mosaic tile, from ceiling down to floor. And there was a dome in the middle of the chapel, and we stood under there, and I sang to Pam the song that I had written for her for our wedding. And I don't know if you were at our wedding.
I can't believe it was 30 years ago, John. That's what I'm just staggered by right now, but I do remember it. Yeah, absolutely.
And I sang her the song, and the lyrics, just a couple of the lyrics are from Song of Solomon and Isaiah. So the Song of Solomon part says, "Arise, my lover, and walk beside me, for winter is past and the rain is gone. Flowers appear and the vines are in blossom. Arise, my lover, and come along." And then from Isaiah 43, "We will not dwell on or ponder the past, for behold, our God is doing something new." And singing that to her 30 years later, it was a very different experience than it was when we were starting. And we felt the momentary nature of our marriage. And my friend, John Piper, has written a book called Momentary Marriage, A Parable of Permanence. And we just felt the momentary nature and we were feeling that just this beautiful thing that we've had for 30 years, and it's a wonderful marriage. It really is. And it's momentary. it's not going to be long before what's left of our marriage really is two names on a stone, probably. Mm-hmm.
So, and I, you know, with that, John, and I think about this often, and Hallie and I are just getting close to celebrating our 24-year anniversary. We're thinking more Italian food than graveyard at this point, but but it's inspiring on some kind of level.
And John sings to his wife, Peter, you're like, honey, pull my finger.
I absolutely feel like I feel like the junior varsity right now. I have to just say, I've never felt more inferior in my whole life. I've never met a note I can sing. And so I've got 11 days to sort this deal out. But that said, we think about this often, and part of what's troubling to me is you share this amazing earthly journey. You're at 30 years, maybe you have another 30 to go. What happens on the other side then, John? I mean, obviously with death brings life, and we are talking earlier this hour about eternity that is coming. And I think, you know, do we just, before we walk in the pearly gates, do we get hit with some sort of spiritual amnesia spray? And so you walk in and you don't know your spouse anymore, or you know them in a different kind of way. Like, how do we understand the eternal journey with somebody that we've shared all of these beautiful moments of life with that is going to be maybe substantively similar, but also different? I don't feel like I want Hallie to just be my friend, like all of my other friends in heaven. And yet I understand. How are you processing some of this stuff?
Well, the thing is that most of what we try to imagine is ends up being speculative because God does not tell us.
That's very true.
What we do know, Jesus did say that in the next age, we are neither married nor given in marriage, but we are like the angels in heaven.
Right.
And so, and the reasoning for that is because once we are, as you guys were talking about earlier, once we are born again from spiritual death, and we do have the divine life of the Holy Spirit in us, what's happened is we become betrothed to Christ, and we are going to be married to Him at the great marriage supper of the Lamb. I mean, that the consummation will take place, and so. I have often thought, how will Pam and I see each other? I mean, we will have shared life in a way that I would not have shared life with anybody else. Mm-hmm. And I don't know. We thought about that as we were walking through the graveyard. What does this mean?
Yeah.
And part of that is, you know, that's part of the grief that you feel. Like something precious is not going to be the same. However, I have a serious doubt that God's just going to say, well, He's going to look at you and shrug your shoulders and go, oh, sorry about that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, something
profound.
Level, right?
Yeah, I'm sure that something profound will remain in terms of friendship.
And we talked in the first segment that so often when people breathe their last, certain things happen, and they often are speaking to the people that have gone before. And I just think there's something that we're not going to just forget all of this when we get to the other side.
Yeah, we do need to take a break. When we come back, more of the McArnell Group. It is 29 minutes after the hour. We'll be right back. Good morning. It's 31 minutes after the hour. Oh, we're having a lively conversation in the McArnell Group with Dr. Peter Kapsner and John Bloom from Desiring God. We're going to take a little break for news. We're going to come back. We're really kind of squeezed on time this morning, so we didn't get to Breakpoint, but you can go to breakpoint.org to check out today's broadcast, and we'll be back with more of the McArnell Group in just a minute.
Live from the Twin Cities, it's the McArnell Group, an oh-so-unrehearsed program, providing inside opinions and musings on important issues. At least, that's what we tell them. And now, here's your moderator, Bill McArnell.
Welcome back to the McArnell Group. So glad you're with us this morning. I have in studio Dr. Peter Kapsner and John Bloom. We're talking today about, I want to close the loop on our conversation we started about John's article that he wrote for DesiringGod.org and his 30-year anniversary with his wife, Pam. And we're talking about marriage and what marriage might look like in heaven. What are the implications? What if you had a good marriage and you want it to continue, or you want to have that person feel special to you in heaven? Or maybe your marriage wasn't so good, so we can close that loop.
Yeah, I mean, I think here's the main thing. The reason that I think God does not reveal much about the next age is because we do not yet really have categories and faculties to understand. We don't have the resurrection body. We do not have whatever it is that we're going to need to appreciate. And so we get these metaphors. We get copies and shadows to give us tastes. One of those copies and shadows is marriage. And the main thing about a really sweet, good marriage, like the one I enjoy with Pam, is not, well, what does that mean after in the next age? That's an understandable question. But the main thing is that sweetness is a copy and shadow of what we will be experiencing with Jesus, our bridegroom, in the next age. That's the main thing it's supposed to point to. Is not we will not lose what it is that we gained here. We will gain far more. And we need to know that God will not shortchange us when it comes to our close friends here, those who we have known and loved deeply. But if you have a difficult marriage, or maybe even married multiple times, and you're not going to be shortchanged either. You may not have been able to taste the copy and shadow in the same way, but you will not miss that deep intimacy with your bridegroom as it was meant to be.
Where I take such great solace in all of this, and in your words too, John, is the idea that we are spinning towards an end in which God is going to restore all things. And some of the limited witness we get in the Bible about what that age will be like is that we do know there'll be no more tears, there's no more sorrow, there's no more pain, there's no more suffering. And so I think often, can I even taste now a bit of the potential of reconciliation and restoration in the future based on past relationships in my life that are painful and hurtful? Like, what would it mean to share heaven with relationships that have been painful? And what is the beauty and wonder of God that's capable of restoring even those so that there's no longer that pinch and that thorn of sorrow in the midst of those things? That's where I take hope in these ideas.
Yeah, that's the glory of the cross, that all injustice will be covered. There will be no debt left to pay. We will not be holding each other in debt at all. We will know it's completely covered and that we are only there by incredible, amazing grace, and we will extend it to each other forever.
Yeah.
All right. Now, one of the things I loved about your article, John, that you wrote in Desiring God at desiringgod.org, and I recommend you read it, is at the completion of your anniversary, several days later, you experienced something brand new.
Yeah. So that walk through the graveyard, as morbid as it might have sounded, prepared us for the birth of our first grandchild 3 days later. Hmm. And so it's better to go into the house of mourning than the house of feasting, because the living lay it to heart because they see their end. And we found that having contemplated our end, we were more ready to walk into the house of feasting where our grandchild was born. Now, that verse in Ecclesiastes God does not mean that the house of feasting is bad or evil. It just means that the house of feasting doesn't necessarily tell you the full reality that we deal with in this age. And so we must have our mirth, our joy, seasoned by the appropriate kind of mourning that we know what our end is, so that we know what life is about. So when we held that little baby and could rejoice over her, there was, tear-stained joy in a sense, because we know this life is eternally significant, and this life will be short. Life is a vapor. And so as we held her, it begins, we feel the weight right away of our prayers for her and what it will mean for us to be in her life and to try to point her to the most significant reality that exists.
What I love about that too, John, is that I often think that we want to try to avoid this mourning and this sorrow, and I think for very understandable reasons, but I would suggest we can't experience the love and the wonder and the mirth as you've described unless we also know the depths of mourning and sorrow, because
that's right.
They provide a contrast that allows us to enter into the beauty and the wonder, because we know the emptiness and the void of life, but then we also experience the fullness. And Martin Luther King Jr. once said that you can't know light unless you also know darkness. And if it was just light all the time and somebody said, it's light in here, we wouldn't know what that was unless there was some kind of darkness. darkness and the contrast of that. And so this, to fully celebrate the wonder and beauty of life, I think there's also a sense in which we walk in mourning a bit, and those two things inform one another in some really important ways. But to turn off the mourning and to try to just medicate the mourning in the ways that I think we do, it also risks medicating the beauty and wonder and love that we otherwise could experience.
That's right. So the next verse in Ecclesiastes, chapter 7, verse 4 says, "The heart of the wise is in the house of mourning, and the heart of fools is in the house of mirth." And you need to ask why, because that's what he's getting at there.
Right.
Is, wait a minute, why should the heart of the wise be in the house of mourning? Because the wise do not build their house on the sand, but on the rock. That's from Jesus' parable, right?
Right.
And so mirth or joy or, you know, just partying, uninformed by or just trying to ignore the mourning reality of sin and death and the need for redemption and the very nature of this world and where it's going apart from Christ. If we ignore that, we're building our houses on the sand. We can't help it. We're building it on something that's going to be swept away. It's just going to be swept away. We will all be names under a rock at some point.
Yeah.
And so we need to build our houses on the rock. Therefore, the wise perceive their end and build on the eternally enduring rock of the Redeemer's word.
Yeah, and death is the great revealer of the illusion of that this we can squeeze all of our sense of peace and wholeness out of this world. And I think how often I've pursued my own sense of, if I can just get to that next thing in my life, I will feel whole and I will feel full and I will feel peaceful. But death is always kind of lingering out there as this great revealer of the illusion that it's only in Jesus's kingdom where death can then lead to life and where I find hope relative to future as opposed to the things of this world. And it sounds like you and Pam, there's a lot of what you experienced in this graveyard that I might not experience over linguine, if that's what we roll with our Italian food for our anniversary. But there's a real depth there that you really discovered.
That sort of shadow of death that rests, kind of hangs over all of us all the time, that we sort of feel sometimes. I mean, sometimes we're conscious, sometimes we're not, but it's always present. That's the thing that we often want to escape. We do not recognize the mercy that it is.
Yeah,
it's there to constantly remind us what our end is, and make us ask, where is the hope? Where's the hope? That's the question. And if you receive a hope that can transcend death and defeats death, then you've found it. And so that haunting of death is a gift. It's a gift to press us toward life, press us towards hope, to ask the ultimate question, because that is the question. What is life all about? And as you said before, I am the way, the truth, and the life. I am the resurrection and the life, Jesus says. And so it's there to push us toward him, and he will destroy this last enemy, death, in the end. And there will be no more haunting.
Mm, I love it. I think it was Stephen Covey's book, The Seven Habits of Highly Effective People, that I read a long, long time ago. But I think rule number one was start with the end in mind.
Right.
And I think that's a really good reminder. And I think there's a little bit of what you did in the graveyard with Pam is you were reflecting on the end. Now, it brought some sorrow and some tears, but it also kind of set you up for the intense joy that you've never experienced before. It's almost like you cleanse the palate, like it's that spring hose down the driveway. It's never been cleaner.
Yes.
Now you're ready to take on, you know, this new joy that you had in a fresh way.
That's good.
Mm-hmm. I mean... I think of, I don't know if this connects any dots, but there's C.S. Lewis talks about an animal with his foot caught in a trap and pulling, trying to get out. But what he has to do is push the foot in further, which takes some of the pressure off the springs. I sometimes think we're so busy trying to get out of our circumstances that I sometimes think we need to just relax and let God work through them. Because I think my response is, how do I get out of this uncomfortable set of circumstances? I'm pulling, trying to get out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and Jesus's final words on the cross, right, when he says, Father, into your hands I commit my spirit, is I think what you've described with C.S. Lewis and the trap there is he's actually pushing in those ways. He's not trying to escape the cross. He pushes in by saying, I will yield my spirit to you, Father. Do with it, be it done unto me as you have said. You know, the prayer of Mary, all of these people of faith that push into these things as opposed to trying to escape them.
Mm-hmm. All right, let me take a little break. When we come back, another segment with the McArnold Group. If you have a question or a comment, we'd take it, I think, or not. It's 877-933-2484. Give us a challenge. We'll take it on. We're unscripted. We're unrehearsed. We've got space. 877-933-2484. I'll be right back. It is 12 minutes till the top of the hour. We are having the McArnold Group, the final episode of the McArnold Group. Hopefully we'll transfer this into the afternoons because it's so much fun. And Dr. Peter Kapsner and John Bloom from DesiringGod.org are my guests. We are unscripted, unrehearsed. We like to talk about anything and everything. And if you had a question or a comment, we've got a little time left. We could tackle one. So if you got a burning question or concern or something that we have sparked in our conversation today, because we've been talking about a kind of a sensitive issue, which is John took his wife Pam, or Pam took John into the cemetery at Lakewood, which is a gorgeous cemetery here in Minneapolis, to see the chapel, which is beautiful, by the way. I've been to many services there. And they had a really moving time visiting a friend's grave who died, I think, when he was 37.
Mm-hmm.
And that's an awfully young man, which probably left behind a wife and kids as well.
Left behind a wife, yes.
A wife, okay. So anyway, loss of a friend. And, you know, we're all facing losses. We're all dealing with personal suffering. And it's really hard. It's, you know, I didn't see this in the brochure when I first signed up, you know, but it's what life is. We have to deal with our suffering and our pain and our discomfort. And John was vulnerable enough to share that Pam and he were in the cemetery and shared some beautiful, tender moments. And I got so moved by the whole story, I said, let's get Pam on the line. Let's hear from her, too. And, you know, I think she's coming on in a few minutes, but we're going to talk to her as well. And she is already on our line. So, Pam, good morning.
Good morning.
We love your hubby, by the way, on the show, by the way, just so you know.
I used to love your hubby, Pam, but with this whole singing thing at your anniversary,
yeah,
I'm out.
He's making us all look bad, yeah. I got to tell you. So
I love him, too. I'm glad you're enjoying him.
Yeah, so a pretty moving time you had on your 30th anniversary. Do you have any reflections or comments on it?
It was. It turned out to be very different than we expected, but maybe not as morbid as it sounded. Like, it was romantic and reflective, and you know, we remembered our friend who was really one of the most joyful people we knew, and it was just remembering him full of life, and then that now he's no longer with us, but he is full of life in heaven. Like, he was one of our favorite singers with his booming voice. We just longed to be reunited with him and with Jesus, and like, it didn't feel like, oh, this is really the end of all that we've enjoyed, but like, we're going to cross over, and then it will be like more joy than we've experienced now. Like, we have a lot of joy now. We really enjoy our marriage, and we long to know. It was like this moment of, like, I was listening to John sing the song, and I'm remembering standing at the altar and him singing to me this song of Come Away With Me. And then I was in this chapel, and it was almost like I could hear it for the first time of Jesus singing to both of us, like, come away with me, my lover. Like, he's the bridegroom singing to his bride, and he's one day going to invite us. Like, we were so eager to get married. Like, this long winter, we got married in May, flowers are in bloom, and now we get to start our life together. And that was it was like this new way of seeing Jesus singing a love song to us. So that was my perspective in that chapel. It was really a holy moment.
Well, Peter, you must have something to say because John's laying on the floor crying right now.
Yeah, Pam, you have wrecked him this morning. So that'll be the end of Mr. Bloom on that. But good morning, Pam. It's great. I mean, great to hear your voice. And it's actually incredibly refreshing. I'm realizing that just in so many of the relational pain realities of our life, that you're talking about a 30-year marriage now, and it seems like you're still filled with you know, maybe a deeper, but the same kind of love and wonder that has grown over these 30 years. I mean, what are some of the things that the two of you have done besides going to cemeteries together that has really sort of brought that into your life?
Well, we enjoy weekly dates together. We've picked the same restaurant, so we just save decision making. We either go on a Friday or Saturday morning. We live near downtown, go for a walk on the Stone Arch Bridge, and then sit in a favorite booth there and
do a lot of
talk. And we love to dream and reflect together and laugh and problem solve and just dream about future ministry and life together. So
it's beautiful.
A lot like a kid. We met when we were in teenagers and got married when we were 20 and 22. And in many ways, we just feel like we're still deeply in love, like we were newlyweds.
Yeah.
But we're a lot older.
Well, some of what I love just in hearing in your story is Hallie and I talk often that marriage isn't just about two people coming together and finding love in each other. That marriage really is two people looking out towards God's world together and tending God's world together.
Yes.
And so it sounds like you're asking these questions as you're in your time out about what's next for us, God. We're not done yet, even though we're 30 years in. You know, where are you taking us together on this amazing journey?
Exactly right.
Exactly. Yeah.
So, Pam, thank you so much for kind of last minute coming on the show. I asked John if you'd be willing to come on, and he said, I don't know, I'll text her. And all of a sudden you said yes, and your contribution to the McArdle Group is really putting our ratings way higher than I ever thought it would. So thank you.
Thanks. My pleasure.
All right, have a great day. All right, John, would you like to make some comments now?
Oh, my.
Yeah, that was beautiful, by the way.
That was great.
You get a little taste the tenor of our marriage, and she's wonderful to be married to. I mean, she, now that she's off the phone, it's safe for me to say that she got
there's
the short
no retaliation.
She got the short end of the stick, and she is delightful, and she is a taste. I want to say again, because there are people who are listening whose marriages are not like ours. And they may say, well, that's good for you. Good for you. But that's not what I experience. And what I want to emphasize is the sweetest earthly marriage is a copy and shadow. It's a copy and shadow of what we are meant to have and what we will have when we are with the bridegroom. We will have a depth of intimacy, of being known and knowing and being loved and loving that we've always been looking for. That even the best marriages don't quite attain to, which is what we experienced in that chapel, as Pam described.
That's beautiful. Well, we need to take a break, but that wraps up the McArdle Group for today. So we will take a very short break and come back and wrap the show up. We'll be back in a minute. We're back. Thank you so much for listening today. A friend named Jim wrote in this morning and said thank you for the McArdle conversation about marriage this morning. Once again, you and your guests have ministered to me and thousands of others, maybe tens or hundreds of thousands of others.
But I think, you know, Bill, in fairness, I know you've been doing this morning show for a bit, and the transition to afternoon is coming. And every morning that I've ever been in here with you, it really has been that sacred space. I have left refreshed myself. Mm-hmm. So thank you for all the work you've done in this last year, and looking forward to see what happens in the future.
I feel like just a player on the team, and they've offered a nice shift into the afternoons. Mm-hmm. And I love mornings because I do. I think that's sacred time. Afternoons. Peter, you had mentioned earlier that sometimes your afternoons can be a little bit more random, where your mornings are always kind of specific. You've just woken up, you've got the shower, the breakfast, you've got to get focused, you've got to get your day started. So for me to be a part of that, it's been a thrill. It really has been. So I'm going to certainly miss this sacred time. Hopefully that will transfer into the afternoon, because the afternoon drive time, too, it can be very much the same way, because you've had a big part of your day, and maybe it's a good time to process it will be in the afternoon show. Starting Monday, June 4th, and boy, will I miss Susie Larson. So, you know, it's the whole thing is bittersweet, and it's what God has called us to do. Hopefully we're going to be faithful to it, and it's the listeners that make this all so amazingly wonderful. Thank you so much. Have a great day, everyone. I'll see you tomorrow.
It's the Early Morning Late Show with Bill Arnold.
Thanks for listening to the Early Morning Late Show podcast. These conversations are available because of your prayerful and financial support. Make a gift now at myfaithradio.com. To avoid missing future editions of the Early Morning Late Show, subscribe to the podcast today at iTunes or your podcast player. And thanks for sharing this audio link with a friend and grow the impact of the Early Morning Late Show.